960 Pinder on Twitter. This is Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
.908 on your Monday. What a week we have in store for you. The games get interesting at Euro. We have NHL awards to give away on Wednesday. Round one of the draft in prime time on Friday. And of course, we'll get the skinny on expansion. When is it? When's the draft? Who can we protect? Who can we not? This time next week, I don't think it would be crazy to suggest the Flames might have a new number one netminder. They've already got a new head coach. And will there be a blockbuster in the cards this weekend for Calgary? Certainly a lot of speculation. There will be a ton of player movement this weekend. Our Monday 9:05 regular is Darren Haynes. And speaking of regular, we're 4 minutes late to you, 9:09, which is about normal. How was the weekend, Hainsey?
Pretty good. I went on a golf trip to Kimberley.
I think you mentioned that last week. A bunch of the boys, family, what happened?
Oh, yeah. No, there was eight of us piled into a 1984 RV of some description, a camper van, I'll call it, and we headed out there to be little kids for
wow.
a few days.
Well, I hope you got it licensed. Was that done? Because that would have been a lot of fun to make that drive a little shorter.
You know, funny story heading out of town. We were not very far at all. I mean, we're just settling in. We're just going past that Esso on Highway 1. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of rattling coming from our sunroof. Mm. And someone goes to kind of tighten it. And whoosh, there it goes. Sunroof rips off. It goes flying through the air. Lands flat on the other side of the highway. We think it might be intact. Mm. Just as we're looking for a place to turn around, the semi pulls right by the other lane and smashes that thing to a million pieces. So that's how it began, and sitting there duct taping up our sunroof. And I'll tell you, big plug for duct tape. It held like you wouldn't believe. Rain persevered anything. That
wow.
was trip.
Well done.
Fantastic.
See, you know what? Driving through the mountains mid-June in a convertible, that's what everyone dreams of, right?
Yeah. Well, if only we could peel back that duct tape, maybe take some fresh air, but we thought beating the rain was the better play there.
So what did Friday look like? Were you out of town? Did you get a chance to see Glenn Gullitson in person? I'm sure you've heard the audio at a minimum.
Yeah, no, I saw the audio. No, we were already on the highway. Listen to the the presser, and caught a bit of various appearances. Certainly, he made the rounds, the talk show circuit.
Yep.
Caught him on Tim and Sid, a video of that, and caught him on the afternoon show and whatnot. So, certainly, he played to the crowd. A lot of optimism, and I think a lot of people were pretty happy with his hire. A lot of people who would not have known who this guy was a week ago, 2 weeks ago. I mean, we started talking about him about a month ago, how many people knew about him. But I think everybody's pretty confident from my ear to social media, you know, from a fan perspective, it sounds like people are pretty pleased with his hire.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think a week ago when this name had been speculated, it was like, oh, well, that's not really like a sexy, that's not the Guy Boucher who, you know, rallied with the Lightning and took them on a long run. It wasn't as if this was Bruce Boudreau with, you know, a top five winning percentage all time in terms of coaching in the regular season. And yet, all the things we'd heard about the checklist, communication, a young guy that can grow with this core, getting the most out of the players, those points were hammered home on Friday. It does feel like a good fit.
Yep. You know, he just, you know, he talked about relationship building and just being he comes across as someone who is genuinely going to be someone that cares about his players, very interested to know all about them, to get to know them, their families, you know, and even just looking at tactically of the type of game he wanted to play. I mean, 2 weeks ago, the buzz was, oh my God, did you hear what Brian Burke was saying at the season ticket holder meetings about, we need to get bigger, we need to get stronger. Those were not the words that were coming out on Friday. He was talking about playing fast. He kind of talked about doing what Pittsburgh did, and they just won the Stanley Cup. So I think that's got to excite fans. And hey, I'll be selfish here. I go to these games, and I'd rather be entertained than be bored. So selfishly for me, if the Flames are going to play an entertaining style, I'm all in for that as well.
Chatting with Darren Haynes, a regular Monday guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline for South Street Burger. Delight in a flame-grilled burger and choose from over 30 gourmet toppings. Satisfy your cravings with South Street Burger. Better burgers, fries, and shakes. Okay, so we're almost done on the coaching front. They've got their head guy. We know Jelena's returning. Video and netminding coaches back in the fold, but there's one hire that remains. I was doing some sniffing around and got word from a good source Friday morning they would not be announcing an associate or another assistant. What do you see in store? Is it one more hire? Is it two? And who should we be keying in on?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they've decided that yet. Definitely at least one. And the name that came up, and interestingly enough, Aaron Portsline, your guest earlier this morning, was the one that reported it, said that a lot of calls are coming into to Columbus organization for permission to talk to Jared Bednar. Now, Jared Bednar is a guy that is kind of one of those, could be a next-in-line guy, a guy who just won with Lake Erie the Calder Cup. Interestingly enough, joins Bruce Boudreau as the only two coaches in history to win both the Kelly Cup in the ECHL and the Calder Cup. So, you want to talk about, you know, you want to talk about names? There you go. And this is something we've seen in recent years, is this trend towards AHL, successful AHL coaches jumping to the NHL. And that's not a new trend, but it seems like it's happening quicker and with more frequency. And if you go back to 2012, who was the coach of the winning team that year in the Calder Cup? John Cooper. The year after that, Jeff Blashill, now with Detroit. And after that, Willie Desjardins.
Yeah.
Three straight went to the NHL, or now NHL headman. So what has Jared Bednar done? Well, he was in the final last year, lost. This year he's in the final and won. They won 15 out of 17 games in the playoffs.
Wow.
So it's quite a record. But there, if you start digging into it, there's a few other things that are notable. First of all, he's in that exact same age range as Treliving and Gullitson. He's a Western guy. He's from Yorkton. He played in the Dub and also just missed playing with Gullitson in Saskatoon by a year. So he's kind of got all these kind of similar. He was in the ECHL for a long time where, interestingly enough, when he won his Kelly Cup, his goaltender was James Reimer. So maybe let's keep an eye on that little side note if this, something develops on and this guy ends up being a fit. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is indeed someone, as Aaron Portsline reported, that Calgary would have interest in, because he's someone that is available. Calgary is a team still looking for assistant coaches. And there is, I think that track record of success that he has is something the organization would be interested in.
He was with the Abbotsford organization in 2009-10, and then when I was there, he was working with Peoria before they moved to Springfield. Another Western guy, interesting. And of course, Lake Erie, you mentioned, they knocked off, they paved the way for the Cavaliers. They won a championship, proving that the mistake on the lake could be a championship city, right?
Yeah, there you go. And yeah, as you said, so after he won the Kelly Cup in the ECHL, his first jump to the A was in Abbotsford, in that first year in Abbotsford, where he worked under Jim Playfair. So he's been in the Flames organization for a short time before he got the head job at Peoria. So a name to keep an eye on as we go in the next weeks to come, or week to come. I mean, I think that, I don't know if this is the focus this week necessarily with the draft coming up,
yeah.
But you would expect that hire to happen sooner than later. Because again, if it's someone coming from another organization, you know, there's a courtesy there where the other organization needs time then to replace. So it is the hire, whether it's him or someone else, that you'd expect to happen pretty quickly.
Who would be another candidate? We heard Todd Reardon's name late in the process for the head coaching job. Is it a natural to assume that he could become an associate or assistant, or are things sticky because it isn't a straight promotion necessarily coming from Washington?
No, I think there's different reasons people will move, different opportunities. They may just be seeking a fresh start. You know, we just saw Brad Shaw go from St. Louis to Columbus, going from associate back to assistant. You know, guys just look for different opportunities. So the Reardon's name, I think some of the names we've heard along the coaching search would be names that you keep in mind, you know. Ralph Krueger, and again, maybe someone to keep an eye on. And I know just in talking to Brad Treliving last week or earlier in the week about the associate coach job and what that hiring timeline was, and he definitely said that he wanted to sit down, get input, talk with his new coach, who of course now we know who it is, and just kind of get his input, because he's going to be working closely with him. But he did have some names in mind, guys that he had been keeping in touch with and came across in his search for the head coach. So, it could be any of those names or other candidates that we've heard during the coach search.
I will say this about Krueger. Of course, he's with Southampton Football Club in the Premiership, correct? And he is going to coach the European side in the World Cup. I don't know that an NHL team can pay him to get him to coach For his career. I believe he's being very well compensated by Southampton Football. It might be a 1/10 of his salary if he comes on to be an associate, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. And what motivates people, hey? You never know, right? Like, small anecdote. You know, I worked with Gary Cannons for a long time, and I remember a guy came through, and he was a minor league baseball announcer. And I got to talking to him one day. He was a lawyer that gave up being a lawyer to become an AHL baseball announcer because he loved baseball, right? So you never know what motivates different people, right? So, you know, so I hear you on that, and it's a name that we've heard, so that's it. But, you know, I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah, okay, very good. Moving forward, number 6 is on the slate for Friday. Let's move our attention there for the Calgary Flames. They've had some success at 6. They've had some pretty epic swing and miss at 6 way back to the early 90s, which were not good drafting days. Do you think they come to the podium at 6, or are you sniffing around perhaps a trade either down to get more assets or up to try to increase the quality of that pick?
I still think they end up at 6. I think that it makes for great sports talk in the weeks and months leading up to the draft. It so rarely happens, trades in that neighborhood, because your teams that are moving down want full value for the guy they think they're giving up. Teams that are giving up guys to move up are giving up prospects, and they want full value. Like, it's just, there's so much you're talking hypothetically that it's hard to make those deals come together. So I think they probably end up at 6. I don't think they're trading down. I mean, I go back to a conversation with the GM probably 6 weeks ago, and that's when just, you know, playoffs in various leagues were wrapping up. At that point, they were pretty settled. They had a top 6, and what's happened to maybe influence that since then? The Memorial Cup is about it. So I think you start to fall in love with guys that you maybe seen in those late looks, but they seem pretty settled at that point. Can't tell you who that number 6 guy or number 5 guy or what that order is on their list, but they seem to be pretty happy with a top 6 that they had at that time. And this is even pre-lottery. So I feel like it's with all this talk, it's almost going to play out as we thought all along. Like, it would not be surprised me at all if the top 3 or the 3 as we want, Edmonton stays at 4 and
it's
takes the Chuck.
Yeah.
Dubois goes to Vancouver, and then you're looking at Calgary and who they see as that 6th guy that they were kind of so confident in. Is it Alex Nylander? Is it a defenseman? We'll see. But I still feel like a defenseman's not the way to go, just from what they have in the system and just the unpredictability with picking defensemen, right? You know, the if it's close, if it's a push, take the forward. That seems to be the rule, and history has taught us this. And so, do they see a defenseman close enough to be the best guy hands down at 6? Wait and see. I'm not sure that's the case.
No, you're right. It's easier to swing and miss on a defenseman at 6 than it would be a forward. It's really easy to swing and miss on goalies. We've seen that here with Leland Irving and Brent Cron as first rounders. I wonder how they factor that in, because I think really good organizations, or at least, you know, GMs that are into a bit of the math and the data, would handicap that into their rankings. Maybe that's built into a ratings, and you still have, with that increased risk, the 6th best player on your board as a defenseman. And you know what? I do find it curious, because I think you're right about the top 5. Those would seem like consensus picks. Those 5 guys go. So who do they like? Is it a skilled forward that isn't physical and Alex Nylander? Is it a big centerman like Logan Brown? Do they take their pick of the litter for defensemen? Because to the top 5, there's no D in there. Is it Sergachev? Are you high on Jake Bean? There's some teams that love him for sure. Is it Yolevi, Chychrun slides? 6 is an interesting spot, but it also underlines why you'd want to be, you know, you would pay a premium to move up from 6, because it's not one of those top 5 guys.
Yeah, I feel there's, you know, and could they flip, flip something? You never see Calgary Edmonton make trades, so rarely, but, you know, is there an opportunity? Do they like to chuck enough to give up a D prospect perhaps to move up to 4? You know, that if anything, I think they move up. I think getting to 3, as we've discussed before, is awfully difficult, just because of what you have to give up to do that. But I don't see a scenario where they trade down, but I could be wrong. Maybe as they've gone together and the scouting staff got together, maybe they did relook and reexamine their rankings, and maybe they did come up with a guy that they have at 6 who they feel they can get at 8. And then, well, it does make sense to drop down 2 spots if you can still get your guy. So that's the wild card in all this.
That, you know, you're right. If they've got a guy, if their rankings are vastly different than what they expect to happen behind them, then by all means trade down. But I don't know. I get the sense they're trying to get up to three, and why wouldn't you if you had a chance to get one of those dynamic guys in the top three? I think we all imagine that to be Puljarvi at three hole. Let's move along here, just to continuing on this week and things we're going to learn. We're going to get some clarification on expansion. When, what year, when's the draft? And I think most importantly, rules on who you can and cannot protect. What do we know and what do we expect to learn this week?
Well, the question I've kind of been peppering Brett Treliving with over the past, it feels like, since the season-ending presser is what about John Gillies? Because John Gillies is in this weird spot where he's played seven career pro games, all in the AHL, and he's going into his third year of his entry-level contract. So it's weird to think that he's in his third year, but he is. The way it worked out, the way he joined the team late that 1 year, even though he didn't get into any action, that burned a year. So he's in this kind of unique situation, and whenever you hear the rules, it talks about vaguely about 2 years of pro. Well, he does have 2 years of pro if you go by that criteria, but I asked him specifically about that last week, and he said, we'll wait and see till the rules come out, and then we know for sure it's happening, but we're under the understanding, this is him talking, that John Gillies will be exempt. So that's kind of how they're operating right now, is with that kind of, they're pretty certain that he will be exempt, because it's a big deal for this Flames organization. They're looking for goalies right now. If John Gillies has to be protected, that is a game changer. So, yeah. So that's their understanding, and I think that's a big one, and we should learn, I think this week, we should learn for sure on how that's going
to
work.
I tell you what, if you have to protect Gillies, that totally changes your approach. Maybe now you're packaging him up if you're going to get a goalie, because you won't be able to keep both, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. And did you bring in, just the ripple effect from that particular ruling. So they have a plan, and they, based on their understanding, and so I think they're taking an approach, and I think right now if they're making those calls about Marc-Andre Fleury, they're making those calls about other goaltenders, I think they're doing so with the understanding that goalie that they bring in, they will be able to protect, because they won't need to protect Gillies.
Final quick ones for you. A buyout window is open. Do you expect any action? Would Mason Raymond be a guy that you could see that happening to?
Yeah, you know what? If you asked me as soon as the season ended, I would have said absolutely. If you had asked me shortly after Bob Hartley had been let go, then I'm like, I think so, but let's kind of wait and see on the new coach. Well, now that we've heard from the new coach, and I wasn't there to ask this question specifically, and it would have been too early anyway, but just from what he's preaching about speed up and down the lineup, it feels like this could be a chance for Mason Raymond to get back on the NHL roster this year. And there are going to be some openings. Think about the veterans that have moved on, and the David Joneses and the Hoodlers. And so, I think I've gone from probably maybe one or two. Smead is injured, so he can't be one. And I would have thought Raymond, just be if he's going to spend another year in the minors, but I think he might get another chance this camp and see how that works out. So I'm down to zero at this point on my prediction on the buyouts.
A little trivia for you. Today is June 20th. It's a special day, one that we should celebrate in Calgary. What is it?
Ooh, June 20th, celebrate in Calgary. I don't have an answer for you.
Well, if you're thinking summer solstice, you're right and you're wrong, but it's Sam Bennett turns 20 today. Huge round of applause, please, Jay. No longer 18-year-old or 19-year-old. It is now 20-year-old Sam Bennett.
So 19-year-old Sam Bennett is 20.
There you go. 18-year-old Sam Bennett is 20 now. Unbelievable stuff. Thanks for your time today, buddy.
All right. Talk soon.
Darren Haynes, flamesfromradiofeet.ca. Lots there. Buyout window. Who do they draft at 6? Thoughts on the new coach? What about the associate/assistant that they are going to need to do to round out that coaching staff? Cool. More on his website. And the conversation we're going to have next week, whew, cannot wait. So much could happen. I mean, maybe they don't get a goalie and they don't hire an associate and they trade 6 for future. I mean, maybe there's no news, but I just feel like there's going to be a lot of news, and we'll see. We got to hustle aside. We'll come back with another Calgary coaching story. Not Glenn Gulletson, but the Calgary Hitmen extend their man with a multi-year contract. Mark French next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Ryan Pinder in the morning, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
.9/31 on your Monday. What a weekend. We had a U.S. Open. We still got to get into that. Jeff McGregor, the pro from Inglewood, is going to swing by and make sense of DJ's big win. Might even weigh in on the white dress there. Not sure. as well as a golf tip. That's coming up in 15 minutes' time. But right now, man, coaches in Calgary of the hockey variety getting a lot of press this weekend, or at least we had Glenn Gullitson on Friday, and we start the week off with great news. Mark French extended by the Calgary Hitmen. Coach French joins us now. Sir, congratulations.
Thank you very much, Ryan, and thanks for having me on.
Right on. How long have you been in the works here, and how happy are you to remain the bench boss of the Hitmen?
Well, in this profession, it's always nice to have some security. We've had two real good years, and, you know, you're always hopeful that you're able to continue the work that that we started 2 years ago when I arrived. So just very fortunate, to have a vote of confidence from all the way down from ownership, Mr. King, and then Kelly Kissio and Mike Moore as well. So extremely happy, and certainly a nice thing for my family as well.
You know, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask you. Tough questions, very important in this industry. How much of an influence has Rhett Warner had on your coaching career? Because I'm told he coaches your son. You've got to be taking notes. He's a genius.
Well, when I got out, I certainly had pen and paper. Every time he was doing a new innovative drill, I was writing it down. But that was few and far between. So the pen remained cocked a lot of the times.
Yeah, he doesn't even have pen and paper at our job. So that sounds a little familiar. All kidding aside, this was an interesting move when you arrived here a few years ago. You had spent a lot of time coaching in men's pro hockey, the Central Hockey League, as well as the American League for a long time, then over to the KHL with Zagreb in Croatia. You come back to junior. I wonder at the time how many people said, what are you doing going to junior? You'd been coaching men. You come back to kids. Clearly you've liked it because you're re-upping for two more.
Yeah, I think there was something, Ryan, there that was there in terms of junior hockey. I'd coached in the OHL way back at the start of my career, and it was always something that, you know, I really enjoyed major junior hockey, and I think the Western League in itself is a very well-run league. So when I look at it, I think it's very comparable in terms of status and all those things to the American Hockey League. The only difference is obviously you're dealing with younger men, but there was a benefit to that as well. I wanted to come back and coach where maybe you could have a bigger influence on the younger kids, both from a hockey standpoint and even from a personality standpoint, that you were getting these guys at such an impressionable time in their lives, that as a coach, you want to make a difference, and maybe at this age, you have a better opportunity in doing that.
What were the differences going from speaking with men when this is their jobs and careers, and they have families and kids, to coming back to junior? I know we heard a lot over the last couple months with the Flames coaching hire, that communication with millennials isn't the same as what it would be with the Generation Xers or Generation Y, whatever you'd call the older group. Have you noticed that? Is it a different way to deliver messaging?
I think so. I think in some ways there's some advantages to it. They're much more comfortable with technology. They're much more used to video. I mean, I remember 10 years ago, you're trying to show guys video and they're looking at their watch and not too interested in and waiting for it to be over. The younger kids are much more dialed into some of those things. Certainly with technology, but I also think there's some other areas that you got to be concerned with in terms of the communication. At the pro level, I remember coming back and the first thing I said to a lot of the junior guys is, I'm going to treat you like a pro. And there was some differences there. And I think we had to step back a little bit from that because the kids at this age, they make mistakes. You don't expect the pro to make mistakes, whether it's outside of the rink or at the rink. But for the junior age kid, mistakes are a way of life and a great learning opportunity. So instead of getting upset at the mistakes, it was almost always using them as a teachable moment that you wanted them to learn from it, whether it was a life skill or from a hockey standpoint.
How do you look back on last year? Because there were so many bright points to it, and then you get maybe the worst draw possible, the host of the Memorial Cup, the Red Deer Rebels in round one, and you got to play two out of your three home games, I believe, in the Corral, which, you know, while that could provide some advantages in one way or another, it just wasn't your home ice that you'd played on all year. How do you look back and measure this season or grade it?
Yeah, I think, you know, we started out, and I think the one nice thing is I think we really saw improvement individually and as a group. You know, and facing Red Deer in the first round, we knew that situation. And I think, you know, I look back and you think of the regular season, not that we feared that matchup at that time, actually going in and in the season series, I think there was some confidence there. But we had an opportunity to do better within our division to avoid that matchup if that was something that was really important. But I look back on that five-game series, and you know, I look at game one and game two in Red Deer, and I thought we did well opening up on the road, getting a split. And then really game three for me, which was played in the Salad Dome, was a disappointing game. We got up to a 2-0 lead, and the very next shift they score to make it a game. And I think that's a pivotal moment. The Corral was a wonderful environment for us. And again, we had an opportunity there to really to take on that environment, but we didn't score in that game. And I think there were some things that way. I think we were fully in control of having an opportunity to really use an incredible environment at the Corral. But we fell a little bit short. So hopefully, again, this is a good learning opportunity for us. I think we were a real young team last year. We relied on a lot of young players. And again, you just hope that they learn from those things.
Big Friday coming up for a lot of kids in your organization. Jake Bean's going to go very high. I imagine it's somewhat close to a safe bet. He'll be the first Western leaguer off the board in the entry draft. I would certainly think he is a Friday night pick in prime time. But you're going to have a lot of guys on Saturday with their phones ringing. How excited are you for the six or seven guys that could get nabbed at the draft?
Well, it's a funny thing because all year round, you're kind of – You sell such a team approach that all these individual things that you know these guys are going through, especially the guys in their draft, you're kind of talking them away from that and thinking, okay, just take care of team first and everything will work for you individually. But I think this is a nice time for those young men and the organization to kind of celebrate that we do have, you know, a number of guys who are probably going to get picked and realize their dreams. And I think it's a real tip of the cap to the people who do the evaluating of the players and bringing them in to have the ability to have, you know, the number of guys that we have go. But, you know, there will be a big smile on my face when I see a number of those guys go, because you know how much they put into this. And it's a realization of a great dream for a lot of those guys.
Tell us about Jake being the player. Why would this guy be a top 10 pick by a team or a top 15? What is the team getting and what would they love about him?
Yeah, for me, like he's such a high achieving guy, and his inner drive to be a player for me stands out above and beyond anything else in regards to what you see about his on ice package. You know, I think the development we saw from year one to year two, he had a great year one, and then year two, you know, during the summer, you could see that he wanted to become more of a shooter. And, you know, lo and behold, he works all summer and then comes back and leads our team in goals and was a big part of our power play. But that's the kind of mentality that he has. He's always striving to be better. He's always looking for those ways to improve. And he's going to continue to search for those things. And he's been blessed with some God-given talent as well. He sees the ice extremely well. He's got a high hockey IQ. And his puck skills and his ability to do those things as well as defend make him a real complete player.
I'm looking. Are you off to a bit of a trip this summer with some hockey coaching to the Czech Republic?
Yes, I am. I'm with the under 18 team that goes over to the Ivan Hlinka. So, you know, that's a really interesting tournament. You have it's really the first opportunity for the draft eligible kids coming up this year to get on the ice and really make an impression. So it will be a real interesting tournament, I think, with a lot of pressure on the kids. And Canada's obviously done very well at the Ivan Hlinka. Personally, I'm looking forward to it. Being a part of Hockey Canada is something that personally, yeah, we strive as a coach to become a part of.
So how do you whittle that number down to a team and get over there? Anything coming up in terms of camps or tryouts, or is that work done by others?
Yeah, it's an interesting camp because I think Hockey Canada will look at announcing a roster to come to Calgary first, and then we have a short selection camp where you've got to pare that number down to a team that's going to go over to the Czech Republic. So it's an interesting thing, short selection camp. The players are going to have to come in and earn a spot and be ready right from the get-go. But it's a bit of an interesting tournament. I think it's a great time to get together and from a team building standpoint, have everybody go through the selection camp and then head over to the Czech Republic.
Well, have fun. That's going to be awesome. Congrats on the new multi-year extension to remain Calgary Hitmen head coach. And one final note, our buddy Brusty says hi.
I'm sure he's working out very hard right
now. He's golfing in the Kootenays, but normally working out, of course. Couldn't miss that. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right. There's your head coach of the Calgary Hitmen. Lots of good stuff there. And yeah, it's going to be a really big draft weekend for the Calgary Hitmen. I think they got six or seven guys listed in North American rankings and would not be surprised to see them flirt with a half dozen guys with their rights being selected by NHL hockey clubs. We'll step aside, come back, and recap a wild final day at Oakmont. This was supposed to be a monster, plus scores were going to win. Instead, lush greens that were soft and receptive, and an incredible rules controversy that had the players fuming. We'll explain when we come back with Jeff McGregor, as well as our ATB golf tip on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Get connected. Text 960-960 to get your voice heard. Ryan Pinder in the morning on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Pinder in the morning, 945. The fantastic people at Glenmore Audi, proud to bring you this event, this daily hour adventure. And of course, the Q5 completely hauls ass. It's unbelievable. Amazing. Big week, we told you. Friday and Saturday is the NHL draft in Buffalo, New York. Steinberg, Lombardius, and Wills will all be there. Wall-to-wall Flames coverage on the air, online, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, anything else, Spotify, any social MySpace. Medium possible, MySpace, Pinterest, anything that you could possibly communicate, Flickr. Steinberg's all over it with the boys. I don't know that Lubo has Flickr, per se. But they'll be all over it. Big weekend for the Flames, to be sure. And our NHL draft coverage all brought to you by Varsity Chrysler, Calgary Lock and Safe, Shane Holmes, and Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar. What a weekend it was. We had the NBA championship given away yesterday. We also have got Euro getting interesting with elimination games. And, of course, a major golf tournament with more on that. We say good morning to Jeff McGregor, the head pro out at Englewood Golf and Curling Club. Jeffrey, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, man. We're trying to make sense of exactly what we witnessed at the U.S. Open yesterday. Take us through it. Were you watching? Did you have this PVR'd? And how did you deal with the controversy?
It was something. The kind of amateur hour, if I was ever to see it. But you get the reaction from all the tour players, and they're just like, they just can't believe it. And after the 2012 incident, you'd think that DJ would get a break.
Yeah, seriously. This is a guy that could use one, and it seemed like he was going to get one. They didn't penalize him, or at least they didn't say they were going to until the end of the round, which is completely ridiculous. I mean, how's he supposed to play? Imagine if he's tied going into 18. He doesn't know if he's down one, up one, or tied. This could have been a disaster.
It was unbelievable, but he was overdue for a major, and the way he showed up and just didn't worry about it and just got the job done and say, well, let's go. So. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and Shane Lowry, the opposite. He said he dreamt that he'd won. He'd walked himself through it. He'd visualized winning the championship. He was the guy melting down the stretch under the pressure. What was it, four bogeys in a row? And those greens got tricky all of a sudden on the back nine on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, totally. That's a typical major Sunday back nine. But you could tell that when DJ took the driver out on number two and drove it up on the green, and you seen Shane Lowry lay up, you knew that DJ wanted it, right? And he went out and just took it to the field.
It's so funny, because a lot of people were saying that Rory and Jordan Spieth, these guys had very conservative game plans. I don't know if the weather should have changed those plans, or if they were giving too much respect for Oakmont, or was it just DJ defying the odds and being able to win by pulling out big stick a lot?
Well, he's just hitting it that much better than everybody else. Here, Graham McDowell's like, this guy's the best ball striker right now out there. And he like the first 2 days, he makes, what is he hit, missed two green and regs? Like, and he could have been 15 under after two rounds, but he just made, hit greens and bomb driver and hit it dead on a rope. Unbelievable to watch.
Yeah, throwing darts down the stretch too. Pretty impressive. A couple ones for you very quickly. Why has this taken so long for Dustin Johnson, given all that skill? I mean, you watch him play, you wonder why this wouldn't be his fifth major.
It all comes down to the wand. Like, I was saying that at the Masters too. He easily could have won the Masters if he could putt. And he's always been a tentative putter and kind of a lag putter instead of trying to, it all comes down to making them. And it doesn't matter how good you hit it. If you can't get in the hole, then you're not going to win majors.
No, it's true. If you're not rolling it to the hole, they can't go in. And you're sort of saying he was playing for two putts in prior championships, or at least that was sort of the reputation
that's
he had.
Kind of like, yeah, I just kind of just saw it, just laid back style, and just he's a lag putter, and he hits it so good, it just kind of maybe gets in your kitchen after a while that you're not making anything, right? He doesn't need to make them because he hits so many greens.
Yeah, our buddy Paul McLeod called this. I don't know if you heard on Tuesday. We had him on.
I seen it on the Twitter feed, Dr. Yeah. Chipinski. Yeah, I seen him.
What do you think of that? I mean, it would be easy to say, oh, yeah, Dustin Johnson's going to win a major, but to call this one and with the run of bad luck he's had, did you get a sense that this was going to be Dustin's weekend? Were you in on Rory?
I took DJ this weekend. I have a little golf pool that I run. Oh, I took DJ this
really?
Week, and he's overdue. He's got a chip on the shoulder, especially for the U.S. Open and for the USGA, and I felt it was his time. Well overdue.
You know the rule amongst bros, pitchers or it didn't happen, dude, so you got to prove that you did pick him.
Yeah, I'll send it over to you. Don't worry. I'll send you a little tweet. I'll send you a little tweet on who I took there, but Dr. Chipinski, Mr. Paul McLeod, definitely called it out and took DJ. I'm sure he talked about it too.
Well, I know he's already talking about it. He needs to do a deal with his agent to get him on again, and he's batting 1,000 and wants to be paid for appearances. I mean, it's gone right to his head. It's just awful.
You know
stuff.
What? It's like PaulMcLeod.com for your secret picks, I guess.
That's right. He's like those Vegas guys. I've got a 1-800 number. Pick, call now. I've got your winner. If you've got all the answers, why do you have a 1-800 number? You should probably just bet your own money. finally, let's, you know what? It's the ATP golf tip of the week, so we'll play the tag. I want you to explain exactly what happened to Johnson and how most golfers should approach this. So time for your ATP golf tip.
ATB right. Golf Tips with Ryan Pinder, brought to you by ATB Financial. Come and see some of Canada's best tee it up at the ATB Financial Classic at Country Hills, August 1st to 7th.
Yeah, so the rules controversy all goes back to the front nine. Walk us through what happened and how this should be played by amateurs here in Alberta.
Well, most amateurs aren't going to be playing on greens that roll at 14. And
fair.
With soggy conditions, I think the USGA took a look at it. They probably had a few guys call in and say, oh, this is the rule. But they changed the rule a couple years ago to not have any of these issues happen and not for guys to get a stroke penalty for when they address the golf ball and it moves. They clearly said that it did move, which everyone in the world pretty much right now is disagreeing with. And he addressed the ball, or he put the putter down twice on his practice stroke, on the grounded it, but he didn't go behind the golf ball. Then he addressed the golf ball without grounding the club, and the ball moved. And he could see that it was like kind of tilted a little bit, I think. You could just see it, and he totally called it out and said, hey, you know what? The ball moved. I didn't address it. I didn't ground the club, and I didn't force the ball to move. And he was really legitimate with the rules official right away, and he called it on himself. So obviously he's being totally honest about the situation. So for them to give him a two-stroke or a stroke penalty and after the fact, and they told him on hole number 12 that he was getting potentially could be assessed a penalty. And then they had to tell the whole field that potentially he could be getting assessed a penalty, but they're not for sure on it. And then they gets off the golf course and they assess him the penalty after the fact that they knew he'd already won the major. So it's a totally, I think it's an amateur hour by the USGA, and it could have been addressed a lot better, and he could have been told right away. The referee at the time told him that he was not getting a penalty and he was good to go. So I think in the rules of the USGA that it states that if the referee makes the call, then that's the call.
It looked really bad. It honestly reeks for the USGA. And apparently, if this was a tour event, not the US Open, this wouldn't have been an issue at all. He gets that ruling. He's clean to move on. Never mind playing the last seven holes of a major with this hanging over your head as you're tied behind a stroke, ahead of stroke with Lowry on that back nine.
If you're an amateur, I just wouldn't even take anything from it. I just continue to enjoy golf and just make sure that when you are practicing that or doing a putting stroke, not to ground the club and address it or hit the golf ball. Because things happen, like it's happened in events where, like, you'll by accident you hit it with the toe of the putter or something like that. It happens. And especially when you got that fine of a line between your club face and the golf ball. it just happens sometimes. Yeah. But he didn't. He obviously didn't touch the golf ball, and he was totally adamant that he didn't. So, but all that matters is he won the major, and life's good.
Hey, life's good out at Inglewood as well. I've had a chance to get on the track twice, and I've got to tell you, you know, not unlike a lot of other courses in Southern Alberta, great start to the year. But more importantly for you guys, you are almost completely clear of the consequences of the flood. Tell us what's left and how happy you are with the new course, so to speak.
You know what? I can't explain how many changes there's been on the, out there for projects. We just finally, kind of the icing on the cake for number nine, we just sodded it, and it'll be launched early July. It's going to be one of Calgary's best golf holes. It's right on the Bow River, and we've extended it about 30 yards. So it'll be a real true par five now, right on the Bow to finish on the front side. So we have 65 new members at the club, and a lot of people joining, enjoying the golf course and enjoying the social. We have a new patio back there. New deck, a lot of new cart paths on the golf course, a lot of new tee box on seven, which we extended that. It used to be another signature hole at the club. Par three that now plays 205 carry water.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to get out there and play. But it's a lot of great things happening at the club right now, and really exciting times for the membership and for a lot of corporate events, and even the public green fee players are really enjoying the golf course and the price. And yeah, it's great. Greens are in fantastic shape too.
Yeah, no kidding. And you know what? You're just so close to downtown. That's always a big key. You guys can get around in and show their face at the office in the same day, which is always cool. Final one for you. You told me about a neat little trip you made with some of your best members, or at least some lucky winners, along with some of your buddies in the golf business. It started at Inglewood, but it ended with a trip to the Rockies. Walk us through that one.
Yeah, we did kind of a secret trip to Banff Springs. So I pretended that I was taking four members out as a fivesome on the out to the golf course on the first tee box at Inglewood. And Steve Young, the director of golf GM at Banff Springs, he brought a luxury bus down, and he came up to the tee box. We had it pinned to the side in the 5-minute parking at Inglewood, and he came up to the tee and said, "Hey, guess what? You're not golfing here today." And they're like, "What do you mean?" "Well, I took your tee time." And they're like, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, you're coming to Banff Springs in the luxury bus." And they had no clue whatsoever. And then we get to the, so they hop on the bus. They're pumped playing Banff Springs for the day. It's just, obviously, it's a phenomenal golf course and facility. And the setting's unreal. So we end up at the check-in at Banff Springs to start, and they get off the bus, and they have four staff bags from Adidas waiting for them, and four caddies with their names on the
wow.
on the bib. Yeah, so we take them, and then the Adidas rep, Jared Engel, he is waiting for them as well, and introduces himself, and he tells them that they're getting fit head to toe in Adidas apparel and shoes and belts, everything in the pro shop.
Come on!
So they spend half an hour. They get fully decked out in Adidas gear. And this is the best golf day of their lives. And then they end up, we take them down the range, do some photos, some tips, and head to the snack bar, whatever they want, totally host. And then we had the bagpipes playing and introduced, and then we introduced everybody individually.
By name.
By name to the tee box with their caddies. And there's going to be a video on it. I'll send it over to you.
All right. Pinder, I love it, Jeff. That is unbelievable.
Yeah, you gotta go.
Lucky members. Thanks for explaining the rule for us. We appreciate it. Great U.S. Open, and can't wait to get out there and see you again, buddy.
Hey, take care, pal.
All right. Jeff McGregor, head pro at Inglewood Golf Course. There's your golf tip of the week.
ATB Golf Tips with Ryan Pinder, brought to you by ATB Financial. Come and see some of Canada's best tee it up at the ATB Financial Classic at Country Hills, August 1st to 7th.
Out of here.